you with, dog?
With the Bucks, dog.
You sure you with the skills?
All the way, Raymond James, dog.
Jack Wallace,
dog.
Are you crazy?
Dolphins? Buccaneers, dog.
Cowboys?
I'm talking about the Bucks, bro. Welcome to Tampa.
Welcome to a special edition of the Pewter Point Podcast, brought to you by thepewterpoint.com. My name is Leo Howell. I am not joined by Ken Volke because, frankly, he does not know about the NFL draft. At least, not as much as my guest today. I am joined on the phone by Ben Natan. And Ben, if you could just let everybody know why they should care about what you have to say about the NFL draft versus Ken, who is probably in Vegas somewhere losing money as we speak.
Well, I've been covering the NFL draft for 3 years, and I've been writing for withthefirstpick.com as a draft analyst for the past couple months. And I do spend most of my time either watching the NFL or focusing on college football. So hopefully my opinion on the draft will hold a little bit more weight than your co-host.
Yeah, he's special. But I follow you on Twitter, of course, and everyone else can as well, and they'll see that you're always talking about the draft on there. So if you want to go ahead before we get started, in case they turn off this because they don't want to hear me anymore, at least so they can find you on Twitter, what is your Twitter handle?
They can find me at Ben Natan, BENNATAN 2.
All right, cool. Well, let's just go ahead and get started. As I told you kind of before we got started, we're going to start at the beginning of the draft and work our way back. Obviously, we're focusing on the Buccaneers here. But really, with that first pick, that means pretty much any of the top prospects are on the board there. Just because the Bucs, they're a 4-12 football team. They've got needs. Any of these top 10 or 12 prospects that you find on anybody's draft board are going to be the guys that you're looking at. But we'll start at the position that's probably most controversial for Buccaneers fans, and that's quarterbacks. Just really quickly, just go over your top three or four quarterbacks. I don't even know how many you feel are in that top tier, but just kind of discuss who you think are the top quarterbacks in this draft, what do you think they bring, and if you got to pick, like, let's just say none of them are gone at 7 and you're the Bucs GM and you don't like Mike Glennon, which one are you picking right now to start your football team?
Well, I think that the top quarterback conversation starts and ends with Teddy Bridgewater. When you look at him, he's mentally mature beyond his years. He looks like a 10-year veteran in the way that he commands the pocket. Yeah, his arm strength isn't as impressive as someone like Derek Carr, and I think that's something that people are going to have to get over because of how good his accuracy is in the intermediate game and how good his anticipation is. And just really how smart he is all around. And I think that is a lot more value than just a pure arm. People are concerned with his frame, but frankly, he's coming off an oral surgery and he's recovering. He used to be 220 pounds. I'm not really worried about his frame. Also because of how smart he is in the pocket, how smart he is with his body. I'm not really concerned about him getting injured on a consistent basis. That's really the only guy who I'd be really comfortable taking in the top 10. Outside of him in the first round, I think Derek Carr is another guy you have to have a conversation about. You know, Derek Carr is very impressive physically. He's a great athlete. He's a good decision maker, very strong arm. He needs to clean up his mechanics a little bit, but I think once he gets that done and he has a little bit of time to work himself back into a pro-style offense, I think he could become quite a good quarterback. But I don't see any quarterbacks impacting quite as quickly as Bridgewater will. You'll hear stuff about Blake Bortles and Johnny Manziel. Preliminary looks on both of them, starting with Bortles. I like what Bortles brings physically. You know, he's an impressive build. His tape from last year, saying an impressive arm, which kind of diminished this year, which was a little curious to see. He has a lot of issues with his mechanics. You know, his footwork is kind of worrying, and it really does affect the way that the ball comes out and, you know, the velocity and the accuracy, which is worrying, and his decision-making needs to be improved. But, you know, from a physical perspective and what you can get in terms of upside, I think that he'd be a great addition at the top of the second round. You know, top 10 is a little too rich for me, but the more I watch him, the more I like him. I think he's impressive athletic ability. He's really good pocket presence, which is something I really value in a quarterback. And then, of course, Johnny Manziel. I think that this is probably one of the most controversial guys in the draft. You know, he's a very you look at the way that he plays a college game. He's very instinct. You know, he's everything comes so naturally to him in the college game, and he's one of those kind of kind of quarterback that thrives in chaos and kind of creates it in order to succeed. And it's really hard to dictate where he's going in the NFL because you have to be inside of his head on every single play, which obviously we have no ability to do. So we just have to extrapolate what he's actually doing. And from my perspective, I see someone who, if he's able to stay in the pocket, you know, and set his feet, he's a very, very advanced passer. He's very accurate. He's a pretty decent decision maker. His arm is much, much better than some give him credit for. But it's a matter of staying in the pocket consistently, not running away from phantom pressure, especially at the NFL level. You know, when you're a guy who's built like Johnny Manziel is, I don't want that guy running around as much because you have an RG3 situation where he's constantly opening himself up to injury. But as I watch more, I might, you know, like him more, like him less. But at this point, he's someone I'd probably take in the middle of the second round. But, you know, going back to that top 10 pick, the only guy I'd really feel comfortable spending that pick on is Teddy Bridgewater.
Okay, yeah, I definitely came to the consensus that Bridgewater was the one I'd feel safest with from what I watched. But we definitely have different opinions on Bortles. I think Bortles is right there with Bridgewater. Because I think that it's kind of one of those risk versus reward. I see the flaws in Bortles. I guess they just don't bother me as much. But I definitely agree that Bridgewater is a guy that I've seen a lot of people down on, and I guess that there's enough NFL people chirping either legitimately or just to cause distractions about him, about his size. And that's like really the only thing I've seen is, I mean, yeah, you can talk about his lack of pure arm strength in terms of not having the ridiculous arm of a Derek Carr. But yeah, I don't see how this guy isn't as safe of a pick as you can get at the quarterback position that we've had in the past couple of years. I mean, obviously other than Andrew Luck, there's not really been this guy as safe as Bridgewater in terms of what you see him doing at Louisville and how that directly translates into the NFL. It's just crazy to me that people aren't high on him. We're kind of in agreement on Manziel. I'm actually even lower on him than you are in terms of what I think of him, just because I feel like there's a lot of hype around him and his quote-unquote instincts, which, like you said, is all in the college game. And so you don't know for sure that those instincts are going to carry over into a game where he's not running away from some defensive end from, you know, Vanderbilt who runs a 5.0 40. He's running away from Julius Peppers. He's running away from, you know, Robert Quinn. He's running away from Greg Hardy. These guys are more athletic than that. They're going to catch up to him, and they're going to hit him, and they're going to hit him hard. And, you know, Michael Vick, Robert Griffin III come to mind as guys who aren't built well enough to take that hit every time. And so I definitely think that that's a concern. So that's good to know. I think that we're in agreement, and I think most Bucks fans are in agreement that if Teddy Bridgewater is somehow on the board, that's a day one upgrade over Mike Glennon. And that's certainly a guy that you could build a franchise around. But it's probably not going to happen. As much as we've heard about Bridgewater falling, it's probably not going to happen. And so let's take quarterbacks off the table. Defense isn't really where the Buccaneers have the most needs, but there are two really big-name defensive prospects that stand out to me in Jadeveon Clowney and Khalil Mack, both of whom provide pass rushing, which is probably the thing the Buccaneers do need on defense. If they need anything, they need a pass rusher. So what do you think about these two guys in particular, and particularly with Mack, who I think is the more realistic option at 7, what do you think about his potential as an NFL player, either at linebacker or defensive end, or both, really?
And the thing I love about Mack is how versatile he is. I mean, you could say the same for Jadeveon Clowney. I think that Jadeveon Clowney has the ability to succeed anywhere on the field. But just from a polish standpoint, I think that Khalil Mack, you can even say that more so for. I think this is a guy who can succeed at edge rusher. He can succeed at literally any linebacker spot. He could probably play inside linebacker. He has the instincts and the fluidity to play in coverage and play the run. He's that kind of player, and he's also very strong, very fast. He's very aggressive. I'm not going to call him a safe pick because I think that's a dangerous word to use. But I think he's one of the guys that can impact immediately as a defender, and I think that he can play in any scheme in almost any position and contribute. I think that his best spot, especially in a 4-3 defense like the Buccaneers run, probably as a strong side linebacker. He'd play that Von Miller role, where he's, you know, occasionally used as a blitzer. I think that he's going to be very effective in that type of, in that type of role. But I think he could also probably play inside linebacker too. I don't know if that's what Lovey would want to do with him, but I think of him, this is more in a 3-4 look, but I think he could definitely play a Darryl Washington role where he would dominate, you know, coming downhill, especially in an A-gap blitz type situation, and really contribute from all over the field. I'm a big fan of Khalil Mack, and I think if he is at that spot for the Bucs, I think they should definitely pull the trigger, obviously depending on who else is there.
Yeah, Mack is definitely a guy that, like you said, I can see a lot of different places. Lovey Smith has a history, although it's not a great example, with Shea McClellan of turning a linebacker into a lineman. Obviously, McClellan, not quite the same level of prospect as Mack, and didn't exactly pan out into something special, but that's certainly something that he's prone to do. So basically, you're also saying that you feel like that's maybe not his ideal position is moving to a 4-3 end, but you do feel like he's versatile and has the technique, I guess, to succeed there, at least in some respects.
I think that his build and his athletic ability is more conducive to playing an off the ball linebacker spot. Mm. But he's definitely someone who could come down, especially in a nickel situation, and just pin his ears back and rush the passer.
Sure. So maybe a guy who even more like specifically than Von Miller is playing linebacker for a couple downs and then actually just drops his hand on the ground and becomes the 4-3 end, not even as like a Leo or anything. On third down, something like that. I just like Mack because there's just, like you said, there's so many potential things that you can do with him. When you have the Bucs and you have a guy like Mason Foster at Mike who can play Sam, you can move guys around. You can change things up. So like you said, if you want to send an A-gap blitz, put Khalil Mack out there in the middle. It's whatever. Like you said, Lovey Smith usually has a more athletic middle linebacker than that when he's running the Tampa 2, at least, in terms of a guy who can truly get back down the field. And I don't know if Mack can do that. It sounds like you at least have some faith that he can. But it at the very least, you've got a guy who you can move around. And really, it's just the fact that he knows how to get after a quarterback. I've seen him run through guys and around guys and just shake people and run through people with his moves and his strength. And I really think that that's really what you need to base your pick on when you're at 7, is that I don't know where this guy fits from day one, but you got to figure out some way to do it. Because like you said, if he's a Von Miller type talent, or even on that like stratosphere, because Miller's out of this world good, if he's even close to that, you just got to get that guy on the field somehow. But anyway,
yeah, absolutely.
And like you said with Clowney, I think we're both in agreement that if his head is in the game, which there's no indication that it's really not, he's a character and there's some things about him that you can nitpick. But if his head's in the game, I don't think that there's anyone in this draft who comes close in terms of potential, just athleticism, ability, everything like that.
I think that you can make a strong case for the Texans even going Clowney over Bridgewater at number one. I don't think I would personally do it, but you can make a very strong case because of what kind of talent Clowney is.
Yeah, and the possibility of once he's fully developed into the NFL game and having J.J. Watt there in the same defense is just downright scary. But
precisely.
The other position that really we want to talk about, and then I'll have one quick guy that I think we both agree on that will tick a lot of people off. But let's talk about tackle first real quick. You got Greg Robinson, Jake Matthews, and now apparently Taylor Lewan, depending on who you ask, as possible top 10 guys at tackle. I don't really like Lewan. I think he's one of these guys who's risen up based on the combine a bit too much. He kind of felt like he was a better pick at the later first round from everything I was hearing and reading and seeing. So let's just talk about Robinson and Matthews, because I feel like there's a good chance one of them might be there for the Buccaneers at 7. Donald Penn is not getting any older, and he's not getting any younger, not getting any cheaper. Between Robinson and Matthews, what do you like? What don't you like? And what do you see from these guys as NFL prospects?
Well, I think there's plenty to like and dislike about a lot of them, especially I've been really focusing on tackles the past couple of days, especially on those two, because of how split the draft community is on those two. With Robinson, you're getting an absolute freak athlete, first and foremost. But there's a lot more polish to his game than, you know, most freak athletes that you just kind of have coming out. You know, you have your Teron Armsteads coming out last year. know, he's a lot more refined than that, especially in the run game. I don't want to be a defensive player in front of Greg Robinson in the run game, because he will run you over, he'll punch you in the mouth, and it won't be pretty. As a pass protector, he has all the tools in the world to succeed, and he has succeeded multiple times from what I've watched. But there's some instinctual things. You know, he has a late get off the ball that kind of shows up from time to time. He has a tendency to get off balance. You know, just some things that kind of worry me from just him not being – he doesn't have the experience. You know, with the offense that Auburn runs, he just doesn't have the experience and pass protection that you would want from a guy that you're possibly spending a top five pick on. But I definitely think he has the ability to grow there. I mean, his athletic ability is out of this world. But I think that he's going to be a guy who's probably going to get drafted very high. He's probably going to have a rough rookie year because of all the pass protection he's going to have to do. And at least in the beginning, you know, just having to adjust to all of that. But he's someone who, down the line, I think could turn into a very, very good player. As for Matthews, you know, we're talking about a very, very good technician. I mean, he's an incredibly smart player. He knows what to do at all times. He's a very smooth athlete. He's not the speed and strength guy that you get from Robinson, but he has very quick feet. Everything that he does is very seamless. There's some questions about his functional strength. You know, there's times where he'll get bull rushed and he'll just kind of get knocked on his ass, which is kind of worrying. And there's also the thing, which you can make a case for Robinson having a similar issue, is the offense that both Auburn and Texas A&M run. With a pass rush, you're not going to get a full rush, a true rush, because of the threat of the quarterback running, which is going to hurt the tackle's adjustment possibly when they get to the NFL. But Matthews is a technician, and I think that if he adds a little bit of strength when he gets into the NFL, which I think he will, I think he'll become a very good tackle. I like him more than Robinson just for the fact that how much more advanced he is mentally, or his the intangible aspect of his game. And he just has to do some very little things to really tweak his game. He reminds me of Matt Khalil coming out a couple years ago. Very solid, you know, a very good technician, smooth athlete. I think he's actually a little bit better than Khalil was. Just adding a little bit of functional strength to his game, I think he becomes a very solid tackle. And I would probably have no issue with taking either of them at 7. I think that's good value.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I'm kind of on board there. A lot of mock drafts I see, and ones I just kind of run through myself, and just kind of thinking about how the first few picks will go. Matthews is there a lot at 7, and I really like that pick because it's not the sexy pick. It's not this you know, ridiculously, you know, hyped pick that everyone in Tampa is going to love. But when you consider the possibility of Carl Nix coming back and having Damar Dotson on the other side, having Jake Matthews at left tackle, your offensive line is really starting to look a lot better than it was last year when it was just a total mess. There's just one more hole at right guard to fill, and that may be filled in free agency by the time the draft even comes around. So taking Matthews or Robinson, although, like you said, Robinson would go from having a very athletic run-based offense to possibly having Mike Glennon under center, which could not be any more different. That's definitely a concern in terms of pass protection. And for Matthews as well. There's some differences between Manziel and Glennon there. yeah, that's definitely something to keep in mind for Bucs fans. And then the one last guy, and I've seen some of your rankings come up on Twitter, and I think we're maybe not in total agreement, but we kind of share a similar thought. And that's about Sammy Watkins. He's one of the guys that a lot of people have mocked to the Buccaneers at 7. I feel like even if Sammy Watkins was the 7th best player in the draft, which I'm not sure he is, that I don't see the Buccaneers really wanting to take a first-round wide receiver when they already have two above average for their role, wide receiver 1 and wide receiver 2, wide receivers already on the team. And I think that you're in agreement with me that Watkins isn't maybe some surefire best player at his position on the board kind of guy. So just give us your thoughts real quick on Watkins, and correct me if I'm wrong, I guess, if you're not feeling that way about it.
I completely agree with you. You know, people are dropping the elite label on Watkins, which is a very special term. And I went back, actually. I looked at guys like A.J. Green and Julio Jones and Calvin Johnson even and Dez Bryant. what they were in college, because I wanted to get a feel for what an elite receiver looked like in college. Because, you know, I've watched very good receivers, receivers I've really liked, but none of them had that feel that you kind of get where you say, this guy is elite. And looking at Watkins, I don't see that. You know, there's some issues with his game. I don't think he's overly physical at the catch point. He doesn't make enough guys miss. And, you know, he's very fast in a straight line. He's a very strong runner. Doesn't make a lot of guys miss in open space as you want for a guy like Watkins. And also, the offense that he's in really limits him, and it's going to stunt his development at the next level. Sure, does he have a lot of upside? Yeah, of course he has a lot of upside. But, you know, so did Cordarrelle Patterson. That doesn't make Cordarrelle Patterson the elite receiver. I like Watkins. I think that he's definitely a guy who deserves to be taken in the top 20 or at least get a top 20 grade. But I don't think he's an elite receiver. And I think that I don't know if he's going to be an immediate impact guy. And, you know, when you look at elite receivers, they're guys who are going to impact immediately and only get better from there. And even then, even if we are looking at him and saying, you know, this is a Dez Bryant type receiver. This is, you know, this is a high quality guy who's going to come in, contribute immediately, and really develop into something special. You know, I've looked at about 40 or so receivers, and every single one of them is draftable. There is no point, especially for any team picking in the top 10, because all of them have tons of needs. There's no point for any of those teams to spend a top 10 pick on a wide receiver when you can get guys in the second and third round who could develop into 1,000-yard receivers within 2 or 3 years. I mean, this class is so deep and has every single flavor of receiver. It makes no sense to spend such a high pick on a receiver when you could address a need that has less depth in this draft and then get a receiver later who's maybe not as talented but can give you a similar dynamic and contribute to your team.
Yeah, absolutely. That's one of the points I've been making too about Watkins. He's definitely been flavor of the month with Bucks fans, and it's something that I've caught a lot of flack for being against. But when I see guys like Brandon Cook, Odell Beckham Jr., who could be available in the second round, and then you go further down, you got Moncrief, you've got Aberderis, you've got all these guys who stand out to me, all these guys that I like, and just the thought of not even getting a chance to see which one of them provides good value, just to take the quote unquote best one at the top of the draft. And I agree with all your comments about Watkins. And the thing I've been saying about him is that I feel like he's like a bundle of pieces of equipment that you can use to build a weapon, but he's not there yet. Because like you said, in his offense, he's catching a bunch of screen passes, and if you watch highlight films of him, you're going to see the couple where he makes the moves and he gets down the field. But when you watch his games and you just watch the cut-ups at Draft Breakdown and you see catch after catch after catch, you're just seeing 6 yards. You're seeing him catch the ball 2 yards behind the line of scrimmage and run 8 yards forward and get tackled. And that's great because he's quick enough to get there. Like that's a positive. Like he's quick enough to catch the ball and get 6 yards before anybody can get close to him. But I hear a lot of talk about his elusiveness, and I feel like it's just people who've watched the highlights, because you have to consider with him is that what his average play looks like. And his average play is just catch the ball, run 6 yards, get tackled. Catch the ball, run 6 yards, get tackled. He has that special ability. But then again, like you mentioned, so did a guy like Tavon Austin, so did a guy like Cordarrelle Patterson, but they're not complete receivers. They're not elite receivers. They're not guys who, like you said, when you watched Randy Moss, when you watched A.J. Green, when you watched Calvin Johnson, the way that they could explode to the football, that they were just impossible to cover, you don't see that with Watkins. You see when he's out for a route, if he's not absolutely just shaking his man with his speed, which is a skill, and that's a good skill to have, there's concerns about whether or not he's going to make that catch when a guy's hanging all over him. In the NFL, if it's 3rd and 6 and you need 7 yards, I'm not sure that you can send Sammy Watkins on a slant and press man coverage and get 7 yards. And that's a big concern. You don't want to take a guy at 7 who can't do that. So
yeah,
I'm glad that you kind of have those same concerns.
Yeah, and if I'm a team that wants a guy like Sammy Watkins and I'm picking that high, I wait, you know, if I'm the Buccaneers, you know, I'll take my tackle or I'll take my linebacker, I'll wait till the second round and get a guy like Allen Robinson, because he can give you a very similar dynamic. And while he's a little bit raw, I actually think I like his upside a little bit more than Sammy Watkins. He's not the he's not the phenomenal straight line speed guy that Watkins is, but he's incredibly dynamic after the catch. And with a little bit of development, I think he could turn into a very, very good receiver. So I don't really see the point in taking a guy like Watkins top 10.
Yeah, I'm right there with you, but we're fighting an uphill battle there because there's a lot of people who have hopped on that hype train and driven away from us. But let's look a little bit further down the board. The Bucks have picks in 2, 4, 5 and a couple picks in 7. So there are going to be some more options there for them. They may pick up more picks through trades. I suspect that they will, just because I think that new general manager Jason Light is going to want more picks at his disposal to start rebuilding a roster. So one of the things that the Buccaneers definitely need, if they don't get a Khalil Mack in the first round, they need a pass rusher. So who are some guys that are going to be available, even maybe starting with that mid-30s pick in the second round, all the way down to the 7th, just some guys that you're really high on, you really like, in that 4-3 defensive end role that could make an impact as a pass rusher?
Well, it's interesting because the depth in this class is kind of weird for a pass rusher. So you don't get a good gauge if he's gonna get overdrafted. But I look at the defensive ends and I think of guys like Aaron Lynch and hold on, let me pull up my list. Sorry about that.
Okay.
Aaron Lynch. I think Aaron Lynch might actually get picked in the first round because of his immense physical ability. I think teams are gonna really like that. Kareem Martin's another guy who's really risen lately because of his physical ability. I'm not a huge fan of his. The upside is definitely there, but when I watch him, it looks like he's playing with his feet in the mud. Everything he does is very slow motion. Mm-hmm. I'm a big DeMarcus Lawrence fan. He was used in a very strange way at Boise State, but he's a great athlete, very strong. His get off is phenomenal. He reminds me a lot of, as an Eagles fan, he reminds me a lot of Trent Cole, which is, especially in a 4-3 scheme, is exactly the kind of defensive end you want. D Ford is another guy who's getting a lot of hype. I'm not a big proponent of his in the first round, but, if you bring him, guy you can bring in the second round, another guy who anticipates the snap very well, has very active hands, very quick to get up the field, very good pass rusher. Other than that, I think there's lots of linebackers that you could probably bring down to play defensive end. I'm a big fan of Jeremiah Tauchu out of Georgia Tech. He's actually in my top 20 players, but the national gauge I'm getting on him is somewhere in the mid-second to maybe even early third round, which is a little bit surprising to me. But, just going off of that, that might be a possibility for the Buccaneers. Atauchu is a very impressive physical specimen, very strong, very quick. He's also has experience as a 3-4 outside linebacker and does pretty well in coverage, which is valuable because the Bucs move a guy like him around. They could also play him a strong side linebacker, kind of play a Bruce Irvin type role. I actually liken him a lot to Bruce Irvin, although a bit stronger. Chris Smith is another 4-3 defensive end. He's a little bit undersized, but he's very strong, very good get off. He needs to improve his pad level a little bit and maybe get a little bit more consistent of a motor. When he's on, when he can just pin his ears back and rush the passer, he's very impressive. So I think there's guys. I don't love this defensive end class. I liked last year's more into depth, but there's definitely guys that you can take in the mid rounds that can contribute.
All right, excellent. Yeah, with Lawrence, he's a name I've seen come up a lot. Definitely not the biggest guy to be listed as a defensive end. According to CBS's draft prospect rankings, Atauchu, pronouncing his name wrong, whatever, actually is a bigger guy all around in terms of height and weight and measurables. And that's an interesting guy. I know that I've seen some people who are really high on him, like you said, but definitely seems like a second to third type of prospect. And kind of fits that same sort of, he doesn't really have a specific position, but you just put him on the field and he'll have the athleticism and the tools to get things done. I feel like if you're not taking a Khalil Mack in the first round, that maybe he's a guy later on that you feel like you can feel a little safer with the risk. If Lovie Smith isn't sure that he wants to risk it with Mack because he's not sure where he fits in his defense, you know, maybe he does it in the second round or you know, via trade in the third round with a guy like that. So that's definitely something to keep in mind. You mentioned the wide receivers. Who are some deeper wide receivers that you really like? We've already mentioned some of the big names that are kind of obvious, but go as deep as you can. Like, who's like a sixth or seventh, or I mean, obviously you won't think of them that way, but guys who you feel like are going to be available late in the draft at wide receiver that kind of stand out to you as guys who could develop into something special?
I think a guy like my lowest ranked receiver, who I still think is draftable, is Tevin Reese out of Baylor. Kid's an absolute speed freak. You can take his hands a little bit. But, I mean, he showed up to the combine. He had one of the highest verticals of the combine, despite only being, I think, 5'10". But he is, you know, he has speed to burn. He probably needs to bulk up a little bit. He weighs about 160 pounds, which is not good.
I remember seeing him at the combine and through the drills, just the way that he catches the ball just looks so incredibly natural. Like, he just looks like a guy who just knows how to play the wide receiver position, size aside, things like that aside. His technique looked really great, at least in the combine. So definitely someone that I would at least like to know more about for sure.
Yeah, I think he needs to improve his focus a little bit while catching the ball, but the athletic ability is certainly there. I think if he can get coached up a little bit, he can probably be brought along as a role player in the beginning, but maybe develop into a solid starter down the line. Other guys, guys like Ryan Grant out of Tulane and Alex Newt, I don't know how to pronounce his name, out of Buffalo. Both very good route runners, you know, not exactly speed guys, but great hands, very dependable players, guys that, you know, teams will definitely value in the slot. Noel Grigsby is a guy I really like coming into the season. He was an outside receiver for San Jose State. He's not exactly fast, but he's a very good route runner, very smart sitting down in zones, you know, coming back to the quarterback, very good hands. He's another guy I think would probably succeed a lot more in the slot. He's probably going to fall down. He didn't play this year due to an injury, but I really liked him last year. Bruce Ellington's another guy. He's picking up speed a little bit out of South Carolina. Very good athlete, you know, basketball player for South Carolina. He's a small guy, but he plays like he's 6'4", you know, attacks the ball, very good hands, aggressive run blocker. He's very similar to Golden Tate, maybe a little bit faster, but someone who definitely can contribute. These are all guys who are going to fall down the board because of how deep this class is. You know, a guy like, let's say, Michael Campanaro, who I'm very high on, you know, probably would give, just in terms of what he can do, probably give him a second-round grade. You know, incredible route runner, very tough player, great hands, very quick, you know, tough player after the catch. Ideal slot receiver, in my opinion, who's probably going to get drafted in the fourth round because of the depth of this class. But he's a guy I really like. I assume that when you're talking about Tampa Bay, you have Vincent Jackson and Mike Williams, you know, these two monsters playing the outside. So you're probably looking for that underneath, that slot guy. Am I right?
Yeah, absolutely. And preferably a guy with speed, because neither one really has game-breaking speed. Williams is quick enough to get away from guys, but Jackson's definitely lost a step over the years.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, Brandon Cooks might actually fall into the second round because he's not a complete receiver, and I think teams might look at the receiver position as if they're going to spend a first-round pick on it, they want a complete-type receiver. Brandon Cooks is very similar, in my opinion, to DeSean Jackson. You know, his size limits him, what he can do in terms of getting physical with the cornerbacks. But if you put him in a situation where he's given a free release, he can get down the field for you and just absolutely burn it. I think he's a tougher player than DeSean Jackson, but just his physical, you know, his build kind of limits him in terms of press situations when the corner gets physical with him. But he's a guy who can work underneath. He attacks the ball, and once he gets the ball in his hands, he's very dangerous after the catch. Josh Huss is another guy I really like out of Oregon. Small, incredibly strong for his size. I think he's about 5'10", 100, maybe 206 pounds. He's built like a running back. Very strong. He attacks the ball, you know, very good vertical. Pretty solid hands, very good after the catch. And one of my favorite things is he's a phenomenal run blocker, which some teams value. Some teams don't, but you know, he's a fighter, which I like at receiver position because you get too many guys who just don't want to fight for it. Another fighter type is Jarvis Landry. He's my number five receiver, but he ran a 4.7 in the combine, so I assume that's going to have him fall down some teams' boards. He's not a guy who's going to contribute at a high level on the outside, but someone who's going to dominate over the middle. Really attacks the ball well, has great hands. You know, he's just a really tough player, and you could throw it to him, any kind of third down situation. He's going to do everything in his power to get to the ball, which is the kind of player I like, especially, you know, in that kind of situation. So, I mean, once again, there is talent all over this class. You know, you're looking for slot guys. I think there's probably 10 to 15 guys that you could probably get in this draft who can contribute the slot and be the speed guys for the Buccaneers.
All right, excellent. Thank you. And real quick, before we wrap things up, outside of the guys that we've already talked about, just take a couple minutes and just tell us about one or two guys that just you think are being disrespected, guys that you think are kind of like your calls to be sleepers, unheralded guys, whatever you want to call them, just people that you think that Bucs fans, you know, and just NFL fans in general should be looking at more as the draft approaches here this summer.
Well, going back to the receivers, my top receiver isn't getting very much love at all, and that's Jordan Matthews out of Vanderbilt. Big-bodied receiver, you know, he doesn't really stand out as an incredibly fast guy on tape, although he did come into Indianapolis and he ran something like a 4.4 5 or something like that. You know, very, very impressive. But he's not an overly fast guy on tape. He does have speed. He does create after the catch, which is good. He's even used in running plays at Vanderbilt, which is cool, and he outran guys. So I'm not really worried about his speed, but what I love about him is how smart of a football player he is. He's an incredibly good route runner, uses his route running to create separation. And he has the ability to dominate the catch point. You know, he's about 6'3", 210 pounds, something around there. And he uses that, and he has the ability to use that size to really dominate the catch point. He's huge hands too. And he can really take the ball away from, just kind of pluck it out of the air. And he has that intangible aspect to a receiver that I really like. You know, some guys just kind of go through the motions when he's really, you know, sitting down in the zone, you know, in a hole in a coverage and really knows how to work with the quarterback and work the defense. And you really see that in a guy like him. And you hear about this kid off the field. He's just incredibly hard worker. He's related to Jerry Rice, which is something that some teams might want to look into, but he's an incredibly hard worker. If I'm a coach, I definitely want a guy like that on my football team. And he's really not getting any love from a lot of the draft community. So he's definitely someone I'll be pulling for. Outside of that, I know that you guys are pretty much set at the interior defensive line, but a guy like Ryan Carruthers out of Arkansas State is probably one of my favorite players in this draft. When I watch him on tape and then you look at his physical ability off the field, you know, when he's doing, you know, weightlifting and running and stuff like that, he reminds me a lot of Dontari Poe. But when you turn on the tape, he's a guy who did the things that Poe did, the great things that Poe did in college, but he does it on a much more consistent basis. We're talking about a freak of nature in terms of his strength, but he also has a much higher motor. He's a much more technical player than Poe was in college. I wasn't very high on Poe coming out. Carruthers has a very similar feel, although he's making an impact from down to down. He's a guy who can contribute at the one tech, he can contribute at the five tech, at the three tech. You know, the kid's an absolute monster, and I think you put him anywhere on the inside of a defensive line, he could probably make a pretty big impact. But those are some of my favorite players in this class, and guys who I think aren't getting talked about nearly enough as they should be.
Yeah, I mean, Carruthers actually would be, if you feel like he can play the nose in a 4-3, I mean, that's definitely a position where the Bucs could at least use depth if we're talking about a guy who, according to CBS, is a fifth or sixth round pick. I think that's ideally where the Bucs would need to be looking for depth on the interior line. They actually don't have anybody behind former rookie Akeem Spence, who was actually arrested this offseason, and Gerald McCoy, who obviously doesn't need any help. But you do still need somebody to line up at the nose. So that's definitely somebody to keep an eye on. Looks like you said, definitely a big old guy. Seems like you know, in an NFL, he's got size as in terms of being more of a 3-4 interior guy. But if he's got that versatility and things like that, definitely someone I want to take a look at, and somebody else, you know, other guys in the draft community definitely should too, because I definitely want to hear some more opinions about a guy like that. Because, yeah, it's just nice to hear Arkansas State. As someone who went to a small school myself at Liberty University, and we've got a draft prospect in this class who I'm hoping to watch some tape on later. But it's nice to hear some small school guys, Arkansas State, things like that. So that's good to hear. Well, thank you very much, Ben. Once again, just tell people where they can read where you write, and where they can read what you tweet, and then we'll go out on that.
Well, you can find me at BenNaton2 on Twitter, and I'm also at withthefirstpick.com as a draft analyst.
All right, thank you very much, and that has been this special edition. Oh, what? Go, yep.
Oh, I was going to say thank you very much. This was enjoyable.
Hey, no problem. Yeah, we'll definitely see if we can't get you back on again closer to the draft once things are kind of sorted out a little bit more. But, yeah, this has been a special...
Fantastic.
This has been a special edition of the Peter Plank Podcast. I am Leo Howell for Ben Natan. Definitely go check us out at thepeterplank.com, and go to, obviously, withfirstpick.com as well. Check out their work. And we will see you back next week with a more regularly scheduled Ken talking about how he lost money in Vegas this week and his pizza parties with Calvin Johnson and all of that fun stuff. But until then, adios. Ain't no losing in the Remington Stadium. We made chickens out of falcons, cubs out of bears, kittens out of lions.